I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. If you took a poll asking people how they felt about polling, well, it might not come back so positively. But despite a population more wary of those who take the political temperature of this country, their findings can still tell us quite a bit. Today, one of the top political analysts in the country, Neil Newhouse, joins us. He served as a lead pollster for Governor Mitt Romney's 2012 presidential run. These days, we'll ask him if determining what voters want in the president has gotten easier. As we approach the anniversary of President Donald Trump's first year in office, we'll take a look at how the American people are responding to what's happening in Washington. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Neil Newhouse is regarded as one of the nation's best pollsters at a time when polling is under more suspicion than ever. Still, Newhouse is a fountain of information about the current state of the American electorate and what this country thinks of its president, Donald Trump. Based on a presentation he gave this morning to the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, it's fair to say the country remains as divided as ever, and that same sentiment applies to President Trump. Neil is the co-founder of Public Opinion Strategies and has twice been named Pollster of the Year by the American Association of Political Consultants. He was the lead pollster for Governor Mitt Romney's 2012 presidential campaign. And to top all this off, he's a Kansas City native. And Neil, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Steve, a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, there's so much to ask you about today. We're almost a year into the Donald Trump presidency. A Democrat won the Alabama Senate race Tuesday. How would you describe the state of the American electorate today? Just how scrambled are things out there?
Chaotic.
Chaotic, yeah.
Anxious, frustrated, and yet hopeful. You look at the data and look at how we got to where we are today. I don't think Americans ever dreamed that they would be in a situation with, you know, with President Trump as president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, 35-40% of Americans believe the guy actually had a chance to win, and now he's president. And I think it caught a lot of people off guard. And then, given how they feel about, I mean, he was the most unpopular presidential candidate in the history of polling ever to be the nominee for president, and yet he won.
And yet he won. His numbers even more negative than Hillary Clinton, you said this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and usually the candidate with the higher favorability wins, which, I mean, neither one of those candidates were popular, but Hillary's numbers were better. And yet what Donald Trump represented was an opportunity for change. He represented the voters a change from the kind of status quo, from the doing things, you know, business as usual. And you had, I think, a lot of people who were, maybe inappropriate, but people were holding their nose and voting for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have his approval ratings 37-40%. His numbers after almost a year in office are among the lowest we've ever tested for a president.
We compared them to a series of presidents going back to Eisenhower, I think, and they were easily the lowest of any of those presidents going back to 1952.
Yeah. They were, he's embattled. His numbers are the lowest, and Democrat, I mean, you look at it by partisanship has really changed over the last, 50 years or so. So that, Jimmy Carter, for instance, was a vastly unpopular president, but his approval rating among Republicans when he was most unpopular was still 22%.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's approval rating among Democrats is like 4%. I mean, this is a polarization that we haven't seen before, and Democrats just despise the president. They can't wait to vote against him or send a message against him.
But Republicans are standing by him, you said today.
Yeah, I mean, it's his numbers among Republicans generally sit around 84-85% Republicans approve of the job he's doing. And Steve, that's not without significant intensity. I mean, 70% of those voters really feel strongly that way. When we've done Republican primary surveys, we generally find a very high approval rating for Trump among Republicans. The other interesting question, we didn't talk about this morning, but we asked Republicans in some of these surveys, who voted for Trump. Do you consider yourself to be more of a Trump supporter or more a supporter of the Republican Party?
Mm-hmm.
Numbers are 2-1 Trump supporters.
Oh, is that right?
It is Trump's Republican Party now. Mm-hmm. I look at those numbers and say, okay, well, we have the Trump vote and we have the establishment vote. The establishment vote says, you know, they're the Republican Party, but the Trump vote, they believe in Donald Trump. They follow all things Trump. And so he is, if he hasn't lost his support among Republicans, he's not going to.
And we're talking about his support among Republicans, but yet you also talk today, looking forward here, there's all this talk in the wake of Tuesday's election in Alabama that this big blue wave is building out there for the 2018 midterm elections. Are you seeing that in your crystal ball?
Well, first of all, I don't think Tuesday had a damn thing to do with the big wave that's coming. I mean, Tuesday, all right, Steve, I think the only thing worse than electing Jones senator would have been electing Moore.
Why do you say that? The Republican winning the race would have been worse than the Democrat winning.
Because Roy Moore as senator would have been a huge distraction in Washington. It would have kept him, his issues, his, you know, the charges against him for improprieties,
alive and kicking and stirring around.
And yeah. it would have perpetuated that. I think it's better for Republicans that that's done and over with. Even though we've got a Democratic senator there, I'd rather trade that seat for moving on past Roy Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that being said, as a Republican consultant, we knew that 2018 is going to be a tough year long before the Alabama special election.
Because midterm elections for the out party are always, for the in party are always difficult. The president's party always suffers.
And they're always difficult, and they're even more challenging when the president is unpopular. And mm-hmm. we've never had a president this unpopular a year in. So this is, these are kind of historic trends. And so this is, it's not a big surprise. In fact, if you look at what happened in the Virginia governor's race this past fall, Republicans lost, I think it was 15 seats in the House of Delegates, and they lost actually 15 of the 16 seats that Hillary Clinton won and yet were held by Republicans.
Hmm.
So the key that we're looking at right now in terms of U.S. House races are the races that are held by Republicans and yet Hillary Clinton won those races. Hmm. And that's about 23 seats. And it takes 24 to win majority for Democrats.
Yeah, I had the impression this morning that you're suggesting that the Democratic prospects are perhaps better in the U.S. House of Representatives than they are in the Senate. The Senate involves the race involving Claire McCaskill of Missouri. How do you see the Senate and the House?
Yeah, there's no question. The odds, House is up every 2 years. There are tremendous opportunities for the Democrats in the House. The Senate, because of the races that are up, because of the states and the incumbents, there aren't that many vulnerable Republicans up that Democrats can actually take a run at. Now, Arizona and Nevada are two great opportunities. Democrats have to basically hold every single one of their seats, including West Virginia and Missouri, which are two of the top targets, and they'd have to take Arizona and Nevada. They have to do a clean sweep. Now, wave elections,
you get that sometimes.
You can get that. I mean, we saw what happened when you had wave elections in 2010 and 2014 for Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, unless the thing is tied down completely, that wave sweeps a lot of people out who might otherwise win.
You also talked about how tough and out that Claire McCaskill is for Republicans. She's an enduring, venerable candidate, if you will. She's been on the scene in Missouri for so many years. She's running what appears to be a race against Republican Josh Hawley, who's the attorney general. The Republicans still have to sort that primary out. But how do you see that race going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's one where, I mean, Trump won the state by a wide margin. Was it
19 points?
Yeah, so
it's a lot of points.
It is. And I've been involved in some of the independent expenditure work and past campaigns against Claire McCaskill. She's a smart campaigner. They take nothing for granted. And I think she understands, or campaign understands, one of the secrets to getting elected in the state is not just the metro areas, but the rural areas across the state.
Yeah, she's working really hard out there.
Yeah, right, I mean, now. Springfield and other, I mean, she gets it. And I think that she's going to need to do that because Josh Hawley is a very strong candidate. Republicans in D.C. are very high on his candidacy. And the public polling shows this race to be a dead heat right now. And that's a dead heat a year out from the election is not a positive sign for an incumbent.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting with Republican pollster Neil Newhouse of Public Opinion Strategies. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. You know, going back to the president, Neil, is he gradually dropping in the polls? Because we've seen some of that in national polls published in the last week where you're looking at where he stood in January, where he stands today as he nears the end of his first year in the office. Is he gradually losing steam or not?
I, you know what? I actually don't pay attention to the January numbers. That's kind of the – well, it's not like this president had a honeymoon. Yes. That didn't happen. But if he had any bit of a honeymoon, it might have been in January. In the last 6 months, I don't think his numbers have appreciably moved. He's still sitting 39-40%. I don't think the numbers have really moved that much. I think voters are still trying to figure him out.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know, given how intensely controversial, you know, he is. Have you figured out why he continues to grip the American psyche the way he does? Because any other politician who was as controversial as he is would be sinking under his own weight, Neil.
But, Steve, don't you think this is the frustration. This is why the guy got elected. This is the frustration that Americans feel with politics and politicians.
Mm-hmm.
They never do what they say they're going to do. They never stand up for the people. And there's a sense with Donald Trump that what you see is what you get. The guy is kind of unvarnished, and nobody's surprised. You ask voters who voted for him last year, if they're surprised at what he's done now, nobody's surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a sign how frustrated voters are with business as usual in politics. Mm-hmm. And I think his numbers are probably going to hold. I mean, if his numbers haven't gone down significantly given what's happened in the past 6 months, can you bet they're going to go down? I don't think so.
And yet, you know, Democrats point to the fact that he hasn't accomplished anything yet. There's with the tax bill now hanging, it looks like it's going to pass. That would be in the major accomplishment category. But so far, nothing in the victory column for him.
Well, I think he might disagree with that, Steve.
Well, he might. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know,
he's probably tweeting right now about what I just said. Yeah.
I mean, they've done things through executive order. They've pushed the ball forward.
Yes.
They've done lots of other things. Yeah, it's legislatively. They haven't had much success, but that's the least of his kind of directives. I mean, he's pushing to get stuff done no matter how he does it. And I think it's executive. If he can do it through executive order, he'll do it.
You know, you use this word authentic that continues to pop up a lot when describing this president. Why is that word so significant to him?
It's significant to him because voters have believed for years that, well, for instance, Barack Obama, many voters didn't trust him. They didn't take him at face value. And it's just, and there is a sense of an arrogance about the guy. With Donald Trump, it's even with his locker room talk, quote unquote, the guy's authentic. He is what he is, and people see that, and they want somebody who's not going to BS him.
Yeah.
And I think there's a sense that he tells it to him straight. It's just, again, voters are frustrated with politicians who beat around the bush, and this guy doesn't beat around the bush.
Is there anybody else out on the American landscape quite like him? Because he is unlike anything we've ever seen before, isn't he?
Yeah, it's unlike any candidate we've ever seen or president. I mean, you know, Steve, if I'd been involved in that campaign a year ago and advising Trump, I would have been, giving the same advice I'm sure a lot of other people did, which is, you know, hey, you need to pull it back in. But he has his finger on the pulse of of mid-America. Not, I'm not saying Kansas City metro area, but I'm saying basically red states, Republicans. He has a good ear for this stuff. If he didn't have a good ear for this and didn't reflect what voters were thinking, he wouldn't have been elected.
Hmm. And that's remarkable, too, given his background, that he can connect with the average guy when he's not an average guy.
No, it's stunning. It's just, yeah, I think that's probably what made him such a successful businessman.
Which brand is more popular today, the Democratic brand or the Republican brand? What do your polls tell you?
Well, I think the more appropriate question, which is least unpopular? Yeah. More popular would be the Democratic brand. Well, first of all, number one.
No one's popular.
No one's popular. Yeah. We've got that. But Democrats have a significant advantage in terms of a party image. No question about it. By, 15 points or so. It's a significant advantage, a lot when it comes to this kind of poll. Well, it's a lot. And it helps set the stage for an election that looks like it's certainly tilting toward the Democrats' way. We have a long ways to go. I mean, it's still, second inning of a 9-inning game. But Democrats have an advantage. What's interesting, though, is the polarization. Democrats hate Republicans. Republicans hate Democrats. Independents don't like either one. And voters are almost looking to elect a candidate who will do them the least harm, which is it's not a positive statement in the state of politics today, but that's kind of the way they look at it.
Republicans hate Democrats. Democrats hate Republicans. You talked about the polarization in Congress, this lack of office holders who sit in the middle of the political spectrum. What are you seeing on that front?
You know what's really interesting? It's the composition of the people we elect. So I worked in Congress. I was a chief of staff back in the late 70s for a member of Congress. And you go back and you look at data from there. And there's a study done using National Journal data. National Journal is a weekly publication in D.C. that reports on Congress. And after every year, they rank each member of Congress. They rate each member of Congress on how liberal or conservative their votes are. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In 1982, when they did this, they found between the most liberal Republican and most conservative Democrat, 79% of members of Congress fell between those two. Mm-hmm. So you had a real middle. There was a congressional middle. And that back in those days, it was gypsy moth Republicans who were the moderate liberal Republicans. It was bollweevil Democrats who were conservative Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So fast forward now to a couple years ago, 2013. Same study, same thing. Instead of 79% of Congress, 1%. Just four members of Congress. And, I mean, between the most liberal Republican and most conservative Democrat. And in the Senate, there was not a single crossover. So what it tells you is it's not just our politics of voters in red and blue states that are becoming more polarized, more partisan. It is the members of Congress themselves and how they're voting. Gone are the days where when I was chief of staff, where my member used to work out with a Democrat in the House gym. And
those days are over.
Those days are gone. And it's depressing. And I think that's that polarization impacts legislation. I mean, Trump's not getting a single Democratic vote for any of these initiatives, for the tax bill or anything. I mean, Democrats aren't voting Republican. Republicans aren't supporting Democratic projects.
Pollster Neil Newhouse is my guest. He's one of the best in the country. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Seth from Olathe. Seth, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Really fascinating discussion, particularly when Mr. Newhouse is talking about how voters see Donald Trump as the guy who's going to tell it to them straight when he demonstrably lies about everything all the time. And is this just, have we devolved to pure partisan tribalism? And is there any coming back to fact-based assessment of policy and reality?
Good question, Seth.
Well, the president has raised the issue of what the heck fact is. I mean, and how reliable the news media is, and his pressing against fake news and news stories that aren't correct. I mean, it has really damaged the image of the news media across the country.
Your numbers you were talking about again this morning before the chamber, the numbers for folks like me in the news media ain't all that good, Mr. Newhouse.
No, they're not. I mean, I'm just glad that we didn't test like what they think of political consultants.
Yeah.
That would be...
and that wouldn't be so good either then.
But let me give you a couple of these numbers to think about. First of all, what's the image of the national news media? 35 favorable and 57 unfavorable.
Wow.
So, Steve, you think in these terms, Donald Trump needs somebody to post up against. He needs mm-hmm. he needs an enemy to and
the news media.
News media
that.
Is it? And mm-hmm. Americans are asked, when covering a political campaign, do most reporters try to offer unbiased coverage? Do they try to help the candidate they want to win?
Yeah, this one hurt. This one really
69
hurt.
69-20, Steve.
Mm. Against
they yeah. yeah help the candidate they want. And on fact-checking, do you trust media fact-checking a candidate's comments, or do you think news organizations skew the facts to help the candidates they support? 61-29, they skew it. And now, okay, Republicans are because of Donald Trump right now, they're automatically kind of, you know, preconditioned to say they skew it. But Democrats say they trust the fact-checking by only a 48-40 margin. Less than half of Democrats say they trust fact-checking. So...
The news media's in a world of hurt, and you begin to wonder why the media is struggling. You're telling us why.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? This is not an issue that's going to – number one, it's not an issue that's going to go away anytime in the near future, and it really diminishes the ability to get facts, to get right. what's really happening. Because all Republicans predominantly listen to Fox News. Democrats listen to MSNBC, CNN, and – the old days of listening to ABC, NBC, CBS, mainstream, they're gone.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Neil Newhouse about sexual harassment. Is that issue going to linger or not? The prospects for Kevin Yoder, our congressman from Kansas's 3rd District, heading into the 2018 election, and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. I'm sorry I wasn't hosting yesterday's show. I heard there was some chair dancing going on in the studio. We looked at the anatomy of songs like Stand By Your Man, Groovin', and Deacon Blues. If you missed it, then Mark Myers, you can hear the music and the conversation at kcur.org. Well, this hour we're talking with pollster Neil Newhouse about the state of the American electorate, Donald Trump, all things going on with voters across the country these days in Alabama. Our phone number, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Neil, Sarah from Kansas City, Missouri called to ask us this. Has the partisan divide in this country gotten worse, and does Trump's rhetoric play a role in that?
There's no question that the partisan divide has gotten worse. And I think it started with the impeachment of Bill Clinton, and maybe before that. But I think in the last 20, 25 years, it's gotten significantly worse. It's driven by what happens in Washington. It's driven by how people get their information, and it's driven by the campaigns that we run to elect these men and women to Congress and Senate and governor, in terms of the issues we use and kind of dividing the electorate. So there's no question it's gotten worse. And yeah, Donald Trump has decided what works for him is a divisive kind of is divisive rhetoric. I mean, it worked for him in the primary. It worked for him in the general election.
But it works for him to a certain extent, right? Because he can't bring support over from the other side of the political spectrum.
Yeah, but Steve, I don't think he's looking to. I mean, I just don't think that's a goal of his right now. He's looking right now to solidify his base, to keep Republicans in line. And then when he is faced with an opposition, with somebody to run against, then he'll draw the lines on that person or on ideology or issues with that. I don't think he's trying to bring over. It's not bringing over independents and Democrats. That's not his goal right now.
He doesn't feel he needs them.
Well,
and they offer him a foiled run against.
Well, but yeah, I mean, he doesn't need them right now. What he needs right now is a growing, you know, strong economy to run on in 2020. And you know what? He's got that. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, if he has that, if he has things, you know, internationally on an even keel, you know what? as much as people may not like him, he's still got a he'd have a decent chance of being reelected.
Your point is they didn't like him in 2016, and he won the presidency of the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How about some races closer to home here? Any insights into the upcoming Kansas governor's race? We have a whole lot of candidates. We have the apparent entry of an independent candidate. His name is Greg Orman.
Yeah. We did polling in, was it 14 when Pat ran?
Yes. Senator Roberts.
Yeah.
You're on a first name basis with these guys. I'm not. Yeah.
Oh, right.
You're still Senator Roberts to me. Yeah.
We did a polling there. And listen, Greg Orman is a talent. He's somebody to be reckoned with. But running as an independent, he takes votes away from Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that diminishes the chances the Democrats have of winning the governorship. So it comes down to who do the Republicans put up? And you may have, I mean, it's going to be an interesting contest to see Jeff Collier, who is lieutenant governor, who is presumed to be, you know, to take over when Governor Brownback gets his ambassadorship.
If he gets it, nothing seems to be moving on that front. And yeah, we thought something would happen this week.
We thought it would, I mean, months ago.
Months ago, yeah, absolutely.
But Collier has an opportunity to take off, define himself. But the guy to beat in that race is Kris Kobach. I mean, mm-hmm. he's the guy to beat. And he's guaranteed, you know, 30-35%. Everybody in the state, I mean, every Republican knows him. His name ID is 100%. He's not all that popular. But you know what? In a multi-candidate field, you don't need more than 30-35% of the vote to win.
How about someone even more local, Republican Kevin Yoder, the incumbent congressman from Kansas's 3rd District, Wyandotte, Johnson County? You know, given the blue wave you're describing here, you begin to wonder if someone like Kevin Yoder might not be real nervous right about now.
I mean, Steve, every Republican congressman's nervous right
yeah,
now. I mean,
right.
And but Yoder works his butt off. He's mm-hmm. always back here. He's always back in the district. He's working on local issues that voters care about. You know, he runs good campaigns. It's a good team. Listen, and it's gonna, you know, last time out, you know, was challenging at first, but it would take a very strong campaign to take him out. But he's a guy who works, he knows the district extraordinarily well, and he works his butt off.
We have an email here from Ruben who tweets, "I dispute your assertion that Donald Trump tells it like it is, Neil. I guess my question is, how do people look at the president's contrary statements and actions, and how do they square that with continuing to support him as the president of the United States?"
Well, it's not people, it's how do his voters. I mean, let me read you, let me find some data here, but Republican voters love the guy because they think he is authentic. They think he's doing exactly what it is they elected him to do. They think he's bold. They think he's strong.
Because you threw up some slides this morning that had some actual quotes from voters who are big Donald Trump supporters and why they feel as strongly as they do about him. And some of the quotes are just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, he makes things happen. He's not wasting any time dragging his feet. He says he's going to do something. It takes immediate action. He needs, you know, he's strong leadership. Had his finger on the pulse of voters.
Tell us about when you correlate the president to an animal and what Trump supporters, how they identify him if they ask to pick an animal that best resembles Donald Trump.
This is such focus group research nerdy stuff, Steve. But it's interesting. So I mean, one of the exercises we do when we do focus groups, we're trying to probe voters' attitudes about an individual. We ask, hey, you know, Steve, if you could describe Donald Trump as a type of car or type of animal, what type of car animal would he be? So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we ask. Mm-hmm. So let me read you some of these. So supporters, we did focus groups and lion comes up. He's king of the jungle. He's assertive. He's powerful. He's a leader. Hear the roar. He's clever, fierce, unafraid. He's a protector. Tiger. He's strong, independent, fierce. Dog. Mood changes. Unpredictable. Aggressive. Acts without thinking. Guards the home front. Elephant. Strong. Makes a lot of noise. A badger. Moves in aggressively. So there are those who don't approve of the president, and here's what they say. So again, his opponents say things like, he's an elephant. If bothered, it can kill you. He, when angered, it caused damage. snake. He's slimy, mean, eats other people. I'm sorry, eats other animals. You can't trust the poisonous ones. A bull, he's a bully. He's stubborn. He runs around with his head down. A lion, he's ferocious, antagonistic. A weasel, kind of, I'm not sure you need it, but you need to go for the smirky, selfish, small-minded, sneaky.
He draws strong reactions from people still, doesn't he?
He does. And, you know, his strengths are the same as his weaknesses. I mean, I've seen polling data, Steve, where voters, 80% of voters say, I wish he'd stop tweeting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's never going to stop tweeting. This is the way he gets his message out.
Right.
This is, he'd rather not have Sarah Huckabee Sanders do any more, you know, do any conferences. He'd rather just be tweeting himself and let himself be the message. That's the way he really feels like he can get his word out. The guy is supremely self-confident. That's not going to change. And he thinks he sets the agenda through these tweets. And he's a master at deflection and distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, no question. Neil Newhouse is my guest. He's a national pollster, been doing it for a lot of years, and we're talking about the state of the American electric right now, what's going on in American politics across the country, and how people feel about their government and their politicians. 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR, up to date. Mike from Roland Park, good morning.
Yeah, I'm calling see what your guest opinion is. My feeling is that this political dysfunction really began in 1993 when Newt Gingrich and his followers managed to get a government shutdown. And I think there's kind of a false equivalence of the two parties, how, in my opinion, the Republicans are much more responsible, starting with Newt Gingrich, as to the current dysfunction. I'll hold the line.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Well, Mike is a Republican pollster. I have a tough time with that one. But,
yeah.
But no, there's, I think... Newt, and then followed by the Clinton impeachment. Absolutely, I mean, I think Newt's theory of how you win campaigns and how you legislate is through polarization. It works. It may not be good for democracy, at least not over the long term. But I don't disagree that that was kind of the beginning of the era when politics became more combative. No question about it.
Okay. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. How about sexual harassment? I mean, is this issue going to hang around?
Steve, I don't think we've seen the beginning of it even. I think it's the tip of the iceberg. I really do.
And what's it going to mean for our politics, or do we know? Is it cut both ways and both
parties? Oh, yeah, definitely. Parties? Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, definitely cuts both ways. You know what? And we're reading about Washington. We're reading about the entertainment industry. But we're going to be reading about it in Topeka and Jeff City and Columbus, Ohio and, Nashville, Tennessee. It's not going to be limited to just congressmen or senators. It's, and it's not going to be limited to politics. I mean, you see it in the entertainment industry. I mean, what happens when it hits business and Wall Street?
Yeah.
This is, I think, Steve, this is the, I think Newsweek, was it Newsweek who, or Time Magazine, put the women as the, person.
Time.
I think they're ahead of the curve on that. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot more before this is over. I think it's such an important issue.
How did a good kid from Kansas City, Neil Newhouse, who was a pretty decent high school athlete, wind up as one of the best-known pollsters in the country? What happened to you?
What happened? What
happened? So much promise.
It was such. I sure as heck couldn't play any collegiate sports. You know what? I think it is. I'm a competitive guy. I was raised to be competitive. I've just always been competitive, more, in sports and then other activities. And I love the competition of elections and campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drove me. I mean, I worked in the 1978 election in across the country. I was local elections and across the country, and I worked literally like in 45 states.
Hmm.
doing nothing but state House, state Senate campaigns.
Wow.
And then ran the Dick Berkeley's race for mayor in 79 here in KC. And I just, I love doing this stuff. I love working with candidates and trying to figure out how you win elections.
You know, when people say to you that polls aren't accurate, Neil, and that you guys are always wrong, they say that about journalists too, by the way. But what do you say? What's the comeback?
Well, the comeback is, well, you know what? Sometimes we're not right. I mean, mm-hmm. But Steve, you know what? When my polling, what we do, I mean, our firm is, we're a strategic polling firm. So I'm not trying to figure out, are you going to win or lose on Tuesday? That's not my job. My job is what issue, identifying the issues and messages that we can use in a campaign to put you in the best position to win.
Mm-hmm.
So if Steve Kraske were running for, you know, for a state house, I mean, what, you know, you could be saying 15 things about yourself, but there are only three or four you really have money and time to get across. What are those three or four? What are those,
right.
What are those things you want to position with your opponent? So we try to identify that. But now with the influx of cell phones, it's extraordinarily difficult. It's just, it's much more expensive. It's much more difficult to get a representative sample. And in this Trump era, I think people are more unwilling to tell us what they think about their leaders.
They're still hedging a lot.
I think they're
there.
Hedging because, you know what? They don't want to get into a fight. They don't want to argue. You know, we heard stories about people unfriending their friends from Facebook in the last election because they just didn't want to hear what they had to say.
So in the cell phone era, you're saying people should be skeptical of the polls they're reading.
No, I would never go there. No. You have to be selective about what polls. I mean, a poll is not a poll is not a poll.
You lost me there.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want people to be skeptical of polls, but you've got to, there are good polls and bad polls.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, the name brand polls, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, Quinnipiac, you know, CB. I mean, those polls are the ones you need to be paying attention to. Every time you have a small college doing a poll over a 2 month period of time, no, I don't pay attention to those.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say take all polling with a grain of salt. It's just it's a snapshot in time, mm-hmm. of where voters are at any one given point in time, and it's a function of what questions you ask.
Mm-hmm. I can, and how you ask the question.
Absolutely,
obviously.
I mean it's how you ask the question, what wording you used.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, the wild card of all wild cards to me has always been when you do a horse race poll of who's going to win the Kansas governor's race or U.S. Senate in Missouri, this notion of how many Republicans and how many Democrats you wind up serving, that can skew the final number dramatically. How do you know how many to survey and to get a more representative result?
Number one, it's more of an art than a science. So let me start with, okay. Kansas, easy. Kansas, you have party registration, and you know when how many voters are registered to vote as a Republican in Kansas versus as a Democrat. So you can weight the data to reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? That doesn't reflect turnout. That doesn't reflect in 2018 Democrats being more energized. So what if more African Americans turn out to vote? What mm-hmm. if Democrats are saying, "Hey, I can't wait to go to the polls," and Republicans are kind of sitting on their hands? So that skews the data. So you need to look at your data in terms of what the partisan composition is and almost make a judgment as to whether you think that's going to happen.
So it's more of an art than a science, as you're
absolutely.
Suggesting here.
Yeah.
We get about a minute left. Rick from Kansas City, Missouri called to ask, do you ever poll on the issue of Social Security and the government repayment for the funds it's used elsewhere? And to what extent is that an ongoing issue?
We have not polled on that. Listen, so, Americans feel extraordinarily strongly about Social Security. They worry that it's not going to be there by the time they retire. And I think it's younger Americans who are most worried that they're going to have to find a different way to fund their retirement.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about government programs, Social Security is one of the highest, most positive rated government programs there is.
Neil Newhouse of Public Opinion and Strategies. Neil, always great to have you. Thanks for taking
Steve,
the time,
thank you.
And
good,
we'll be in touch.
Good
okay?
to be back in KC.
You bet. Coming up, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list.
Walking, spend a lot of time walking, that's what people do. Getting over you, smiling, to see me smiling. The whole act's just for you. What else can I do? People say I'm better off alone. So I'm trying, trying, trying. Oh, please, if you see me cry, I apologize.
Wow, what a song. Brian McTavish is here to talk about some cool stuff to do on your weekends, yeah. And there's a voice for it.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Nicole, oh, my gosh.
Nicole Atkins.
Oh, listen to her crying. Listen to her. She thinks she's Roy Orbison.
That's the old song, the Roy Orbison song.
Well, actually, right? Okay, this is her song, A Little Crazy. And as we both know, when it comes in love relationships, a little is enough.
Yes.
Right? Okay, when it comes to crazy. But Nicole actually does a killer version of Roy Orbison's crying in concert.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It's hard to imagine she will not tackle that when the super engagingly confessional singer-songwriter with a definite thang for Roy Orbison performs at 8 o'clock Sunday. 8 o'clock Sunday. Really, people, get down there. I think I'm going to get down there at the Riot Room.
Which is where? That's downtown, isn't it?
I believe the Riot Room is in Midtown. It's in Westport. It's right there in the heart of Westport, I believe.
Okay, gotta go.
In any event, very quickly, she has a new album. It's called Goodnight Rhonda Lee. That's a nice little tune I almost played for us today. But Rhonda Lee was kind of her nickname for bad behavior. And she's out about being a recovering alcoholic. And so when she calls her album Goodnight Rhonda Lee, it's kind of time for her to put that person, her nickname person, to bed. She's very clever. She's very serious, including when singing A Night of Serious Drinking, Broke Down Luck, A Dream Without Pain. Imagine that. Hmm. And when she does A Little Crazy, I'm telling you what, have
work.
A great time out there Sunday at the Riot Room with Nicole Atkins.
This world is always changing. Something stay the same. I will always be here to
That's Pokey LaFarge. He's got a whole bunch of fans around KCUR, including Nico Leone, who is our general manager.
Who's not a fan of this guy? Okay, he's this great Americana-style music artist. He specializes in old-timey-sounding enchantment. 9 o'clock Saturday, Knucklehead Saloon. I believe he's in the garage. But take this tune on his latest album, which is called Manic Revelations. He doesn't care if his girl has any money or what the future may hold. He is into her, not what she might be able to do for him. So when he sings, and this just gets me, it could all be over tomorrow, babe, he sings, but I will never change. Keep it coming, Pokey. Pokey LaFarge, Saturday night, Knucklehead Saloon.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 aspirational things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org. Have here.
What do we have? Or does that sound like the sound of eternity, perhaps?
Sounds relaxing.
Well, it is relaxing, but it's something I picked to go along with this item. It's The Dreams of the Kings, a jade suit for eternity. That is a new Chinese art exhibit featuring many precious objects which were excavated from the tombs of the kings of Chu, including a 2,000-year-old jade and gold burial suit.
Hmm.
Have you seen a picture of this?
I have not.
You can see it with your own eyes from 10 to 5 Saturday and beyond. It's new exhibit opening up on Saturday at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. And here is an extra. Admission to this exhibit includes a ticket to see the museum's Through the Eyes of Picasso. You know all about that exhibit.
We've been over
you guys did a remote over there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can wait until April 8th when the Eyes of Picasso closes. Maybe do both Dreams of the Kings and Eyes of Picasso this weekend.
Okay. Sounds like something fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself
kind of hate to cut her off, don't you?
Nice to hear that again.
All right, well, this is the real Judy Garland. For the totally fake and hilarious, I'm sure, Judy Garland, check out Late Night Theaters, the Judy Garland pill-popping Christmas show. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I don't know who else could get away with it. But these guys, or I should say guys in drag, guys playing girls, girls playing guys, it's a vintage celebrity-obsessed holiday satire by our friends, the gang at Late Night Theater. 8 o'clock show Friday is sold out. So people do like this sort of thing, including me. But you can check out a show. Tickets still available Saturday at 8, Sunday at 6. Where else but Missy B's in Midtown? The plot, I could get into it. We don't have the time, and even if we did, it's about the laughs, not the plot. But it's about, I can't resist, it's like a 1960s version of Judy Garland, the drug-addled persona, you know, kind of a bittersweet thing going on here. You know, I'd call it like heartwarming subversiveness that's going on here. And Judy is in all of her strange glory, and, oh, people like Elvis Presley and Ella Fitzgerald show up. It's a star-studded nostalgia fest, courtesy of Late Night Theater this weekend at Missy B's.
And finally today.
Finally.
Nothing but high-class tunes from the up-to-date staff.
Hey, we got to play that once a year.
Yeah.
At least we're not playing it in July, right? Yeah. You know, we're kind of getting close. Here's why.
That would get old pretty fast.
Well, speak for yourself.
Yeah.
I thought you were the dog lover in this room.
Yeah, I like dogs.
All right, well, come on. Step up.
Not
Let's go.
Dogs, yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. It's the Bark Happy Ugly Sweater Fashion Show. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, proud pooch owners. You sound ready, yeah. Proud pooch owners put their doggies in horrible holiday sweaters from 2 to 4 Saturday. Hey, and this is another thing you like. It's going to happen at the Westlake Ace Hardware. You're a hardware store kind of guy.
I am.
Westlake Ace Hardware, 1000 Westport Road. Okay, dog lover, do you think these pets know that they're wearing dumb pullovers for the enjoyment of doting humans?
Probably not.
They don't even know what day it is, Steve.
Yes.
But they don't have to because they are so darn cute. The Bow Wow celebration includes photo ops with Santa Paws. That's right, you heard me. And the chance to donate to Wayside Wave simply by purchasing a $15 admission
God,
ticket.
God, I love your enthusiasm.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why he's here every week.
Mr. Yeah. Enthusiasm.
Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. Thanks for the good list.
It's our list. Have a great time, Kansas City.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. And thank goodness the barking dogs are now gone. Looking to catch a flick with a family, friends, or that special someone? Tomorrow's show will run them all down with our film critics, who will also pick their top picks of the films of 2017. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Justin Garnett. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.